You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 28th of November 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, we've got a bit of good news to begin with. It does seem as if things are changing, as if the tide is turning. We have Elon Musk that's taken over Twitter and he's talking about, well, he's not just talking about actually, he did a poll to see whether people wanted to see Twitter accounts reinstated, so long as they hadn't broken the law. And I think it was an overwhelming result of people saying, yes, we want to see Twitter accounts reinstated, of people that have not broken any law, which does mean the majority of Twitter accounts should come back. We might actually get free speech again. On Twitter, we've got this supposedly right-wing government in Italy, supposedly right-wing government in Sweden. We already had one in Hungary. We already had one in Poland. And now we hear that the authorities, or not really the authorities, but the authorities in London are no longer going to refer to BAME people, as black and minority ethnic. They're going to refer to them as the global majority. And I find this rather interesting because I've referred to non-whites as the global majority, just to highlight the point that we as white people are the global minority and we have the global majority moving into our countries and replacing us. And we're being told that they're a minority and we need to be making exceptions for them, when in actual fact, we as white people are the minority. So it's very interesting that these local government officials are now going to be referring to non-whites as the global majority. And of course, we did cover it last year when the government advised that people should not refer to non-whites as BAME or BAMI or black and minority ethnic. They said that what you should try to do is to refer to the specific ethnicity, which again is a good thing. I mean, you want to be as accurate as possible when you refer to people. And if you're referring to them by their ethnicity, that encourages them to identify with their ethnicity, which is one step away from becoming an ethno-nationalist. So let's have a look at this article here. Local government officials in a London borough will now refer to people currently classed as minority ethnic as global majority, in a possibly misguided attempt to be more politically correct. Westminster City Council, which governs the heart of Britain's hyper-diverse capital, will be dropping the term BAME or BAMI, the rather tortured British alternative to people of colour in America, being short for black, Asian and minority ethnic, in favour of global majority, following criticism of the current terminology following the Black Lives Matter disorder of 2020. And I do like the way they refer to it as the Black Lives Matter disorder rather than the Black Lives Matter protests in honour of St. Floyd. And of course, this is Westminster City Council, which are doing this. So this is the centre of London that are now going to refer to non-whites as the global majority. They say here, people of colour is the term in America, but it's actually BIPOC, isn't it? It's black and indigenous people of colour. They've changed it from people of colour now to BIPOC. I mean, the thing with all these names, all these words, they change them. Every few years, they change them. And the word that's in current usage becomes a slur word for some reason. And they change it. If you think about it, you think about all the different names we've had for black people. And basically, after a decade or so, we get told that we should no longer use that word. It's offensive. And now we're being told that BAME is offensive, and they're now going to use this global majority, which I think is very good. It highlights the fact that as white people, we are the global minority. And it also then you can point out the fact that within 40 years, we're going to be the minority within our own countries as well. Possibly earlier than that in some other European countries, but the prediction in Britain is that by 2060, we will be a minority. That's white people will be a minority within Britain. The term global majority was popularized by Rosemary Campbell Stevens, a woke activist consultant and professional associate at the so-called Center for Educational Leadership and Decoloniality at Leeds Beckett University. And she thought it up to encourage ethnic minorities in Britain to think of themselves as belonging to the majority on planet Earth, according to the Times. And yes, they should be thinking of themselves as the majority. They are the majority. And I can recall seeing memes that were saying that white people are only 8% or projected to only be 8% of the world's population. So only a tenth of the population is actually white people. And yet all the white countries have got non-whites flooding into them, displacing the whites that are already there. And again, we're told that these are ethnic minorities. They're not. They're the ethnic majority. That is once they see themselves as being in the same category as other non-whites. Of course, they might be different ethnicities. I mean, you could have a Somalian is obviously going to be very different to a Pakistani, and Pakistani is going to be very different to an Arab. But when you say they're all the global majority, it's really sort of giving them an artificial resemblance to one another, isn't it? It's giving them an artificial identity. I mean, I can see the same problems with it that there is with BAME, isn't there? I mean, it's not specific. What it's actually doing is highlighting the fact that whites are a minority. That's what it's doing, isn't it? She thinks that it's going to say to them, well, you're actually part of the majority. But I think they know that anyway. They know that if they consider themselves as being non-whites, non-whites are the global majority. If they think of themselves as their specific ethnicity, then that might not be so. I mean, we have lots of different countries in Africa, don't we? Lots of different countries in Arabia. So I think that's why they're saying here that it's a possibly misguided attempt to be more politically correct. But I think it's great because it does work in our favour. She thinks it works in her favour because it gets non-whites to identify as being part of a majority. Well, that's great. I mean, if it benefits them and it benefits us as well as white people, then, you know, we really can't complain, can we? She says it refers to people who are black, African, Asian, brown, dual heritage, indigenous to the global south, and or who have been racialized as ethnic minorities. So she sees it as racializing people. I mean, how can you racialize someone? Everybody is a part of one race or another, aren't they? Even if they're mixed race, they're still mixed race. It's still a race. It doesn't mean people are racialized. That's, you know, you can't racialize somebody. It's something that is a part of your identity, isn't it? It's a category that we belong to. Of course, E. Michael Jones says that it's a category of the mind. It's not a category of reality. But the different subspecies are categories of reality. And what he's pointing to is mixing people together, saying people are white instead of saying people are Italian or people are German. He's saying that that's what's artificial. And it's the same thing here, really, isn't it? I mean, it's artificial. It's an artificial identity to say that they are part of the global majority. And I guess she's just trying to think of something that's opposite to ethnic minorities, because, of course, they get referred to as ethnic minorities within white countries because they are a minority within the white country. But when you look at the global stage, they're the majority. And of course, and that's the point. That's the point that we try to make as white ethno-nationalists is the fact that we are this small minority on the world stage, and we resent the fact that we're being displaced at such a fast rate, resent the fact that we're being displaced at all, and this displacement is all being carried out by our elected representatives. I mean, that's the worst part of this. We're doing this to ourselves. This Rosemary Campbell Stevens, she explained, observing that worldwide, these groups represent approximately 80% of the world's population, making them the global majority. And I wonder if she's leaving the Chinese out there, because I'm sure white people don't make up 20% of the world's population. Maybe that meme that I saw was different. I mean, I think it said something like 8% of the world is white and 4% of the world are white females. And we should be preserving the white heritage, basically, because it's a minority. Westminster City Council is not the first public body to push the term global majority, however, with activists and institutions having begun to push it some time ago. And it's a phrase which I've used. I've used it quite often, in actual fact, referred to non-whites as the global majority. And I've referred to ourselves as white people as the global minority or a global minority. The University of East London, for example, was publicly using it on social media months ago, while the University of Northampton has boasted a global ethnic majority staff network since at least 2020. And of course, it also, you know, it highlights the fact that if you have all these programs that are in place to help minorities because they are a minority and they deserve a leg up, perhaps because they find things a little bit harder than the majority does. Well, if you're referring to them as a global ethnic majority, then they can't really argue that, can they? They can't really argue that that they've been oppressed by this other group of people because they're in the majority and the other group of people are a minority. You know, they have the strength of numbers there, don't they? The increasingly woke and decreasingly attended established Church of England, meanwhile, has already adopted the related term global majority heritage. Now, that is interesting. Heritage there. I mean, how can you have a global majority heritage? How can you say that a Somalian's heritage is the same as a Saudi's heritage and is the same as a New Zealand Maori's heritage? Of course, you can't. It's all a different heritage. Your heritage is based on your specific ethnicity. There is no global majority heritage, is there? I mean, you can say there is a white heritage. You can say that Europeans have done things over the years which they all have in common. But you can't really say that people in New Zealand, Maoris, have got something in common with Saudis. And whatever the Saudis invented, the Maoris can also lay claim to it. But you can say that things that European people invented, that other Europeans can also lay claim to as it being a part of their heritage, because all white people are part of the same extended family. But you couldn't say that, say, Australian Aborigines were part of the same extended family as Saudis or Pakistanis or Somalians, could you? So the Church of England there really is, they're being a bit disingenuous there, I think, by referring to a global majority heritage. Private media enterprises have also begun using it, including Vogue, for example. So it's a highly fashionable term, the global majority. While Westminster City Council, run by the leftist Labour Party, appears to be adopting her terminology to boost her woke credentials, it ironically leans into the talking points of ethno-nationalists, who often complain that people of European descent are significantly fewer in number, or are projected to become significantly fewer in number than, for example, people of Asian and African descent, making them the true minority. And that's the point, isn't it? I mean, if you look at just Asians on their own or Africans on their own, they don't really make up that many people in somewhere such as Britain. But if you look at Asians, Africans, Chinese and put them all together, then you can say that they do make up a significant number. You can say that they make up probably, I don't know, 20% of the population. If you're looking at people under the age of 20, then they probably make up about 40% of the population. And that is a significant number. And white people are becoming fewer and fewer, basically. And this highlights it. Another, perhaps more grounded consideration for local government officials in London when weighing whether or not to continue classing non-white residents as minority ethnic might be that they are numerically no longer in a minority locally, still less globally. People categorised as white British in the 2021 census were only 43.4% of the British capital's population. and had already dipped below 50% at the time of the previous census in 2011. So more than half of the people in London, the capital of England, more than half are non-white. Indigenous Britons are already a minority in their capital city. And yet the non-whites are the ones being referred to as the minority. So I think this is a very good thing that we're going to be referring to the global majority from now on. I think I will try to use it more here at Radio Alban and keep on top of the trends. And of course, what this really does highlight is the population, what's going on with demographics globally. You know, we often talk about demographics within white countries, but we don't talk that much about the demographics globally. And I found another interesting article here, which I think was from a couple of years ago, and it's in The Guardian. And they say, in 2022, the world's population will pass 8 billion. It has increased by a third in just two decades. By 2050, there will be about 9.5 billion of us on the planet, according to respected demographers. This makes recent comments by Elon Musk baffling. According to him, the low birth rate and the rapidly declining birth rate is one of the biggest risks to civilization. And of course, what they're missing there is Elon Musk is obviously talking about the rapidly declining white birth rate. So that's what I find interesting. He is linking the rapidly declining white birth rate to being one of the biggest risks to civilization. Of course, he is implying there that the ability to maintain civilization is not necessarily held by every ethnic group. And that's because every ethnic group hasn't created a civilization. So we don't know whether they would be able to maintain it. I mean, we can look at what's happened to civilizations in the past, once the majority in that civilization ceased to be the same ethnicity as the people that created it, and that civilization falls. Whether Elon Musk is aware of that or not, or whether he just sort of subconsciously stated this, I don't know. It is quite surprising that he pointed out that the low birth rate is a big risk to civilization, because of course all the climate change narrative is that we've got far too many people and we must slow down the breeding. And of course, if white people are not replacing themselves, they're not producing enough to replace themselves, then it must be non-whites that are increasing like this. And yes, it is, particularly Africa. The populations of more than half of Africa's 54 nations will double or more by 2050. The product of sustained high fertility and improving mortality rates. So half of Africa, the nations of half of Africa are going to double. And the reason for that is because of white technology. It's white technology, white medical technology that we gave to them that has helped them to improve this mortality rate. And the belief is that once you increase medical technology and people start to live for longer, then they won't produce so many children to replace them. In Africa, you tend to have lots of children because life is fairly cheap. And if one of them dies, you've got another one to replace them. They don't really have the sort of same welfare that we have in Europe. So they need somebody to look after them when they get old. So they produce lots of children. So the idea is that the faster Africa develops, the less children will be required to look after the people there. But of course, that hasn't happened yet. I mean, we've been increasing the medical technology. We've been increasing the standard of living there probably for the last 100 years or so. But it hasn't slowed down the birth rate, has it? As they say here, by 2050, more than half of Africa's 54 nations will double. The continent will then be home to at least 25% of the world's population, compared with less than 10% in 1950. So think about that. Just in 100 years, they've more than doubled. And expanding at that rate is quite a serious problem, isn't it? This is why we have so many of them that are flowing into Europe, because of this increase in the population there. Expansion on this scale is unprecedented, whereas the population of Asia will have multiplied by a factor of 4 in this time frame, Africa's will have risen tenfold. And what they're talking about there is just within 100 years. So obviously they must have had much fewer. I guess what they're saying here is they had 10% of the world in 1950, but they've increased tenfold by the time we get to 2050. Chronic youthfulness, as demographer Richard Chincotta has termed it, is the result. 40% of all Africans are children under the age of 14. And in most African countries, the median age is below 20. So you have a very, very young population without much experience, without the ability to run businesses and all that sort of thing. And this is the reason why so much food aid needs to go to Africa, because their demographics just are messed up, aren't they, really? If you think, you imagine what your country would be like if half the country were all under the age of 30. And you think what the government would be like if most of the country were under the age of 30. I mean, they wouldn't really have very much experience, would they? So I guess this is one of the problems that the Africans have. African mothers will have about 450 million children in the 2020s, and this is projected to rise to more than 550 million in the 2040s. About 40% of all children born worldwide in that decade. Overall, low or rapidly declining birth rates remain the exception rather than the rule in most of Africa. Globally, the number of births are at their highest level ever, 140 million a year, and are unlikely to fall by much in the course of the next 2 to 3 decades. So by the time we get to the 2040s, about just under half of all the children born worldwide will be black Africans. And of course, remember, the average IQ of the black African is about 70. So about half the world is going to have an IQ of around about 70. And this is also another problem that's caused for Africa. They have so many people there, but so few of them actually have a high enough IQ to be able to work in hospitals, do high-powered jobs. Of course, they do have a few of them. They do have a few highly intelligent Africans, but a very small percentage, because their average IQ is 70 to 75. I mean, you've got some African countries with an IQ of under 70. So we're going to have more and more children worldwide that have a lower and lower IQ, which is just going to bring down the average IQ of the world, isn't it? If you have more people born with an average IQ of 70, if you don't forget, white people have an IQ of 100. That is the median. And if you think half the world is by that time is going to have an IQ of 70, it means that the people with the IQ of 100 are going to be doing a certain amount of work in order to prop up the ones with the IQ of 70. And all of this has been caused by just handing our medical technology over to this other group of people. They say here, that is some bow wave underpinning future population growth, for good or ill or both. With continuing high fertility in East, West and Central Africa, the continent will contribute 1.3 billion of the 2 billion increase in the global population between 2019 and 2050. So just think about that. Two-thirds of the increase in numbers is going to come from Africa just in the next 25 years. By then, the populations of East and West Africa will each exceed that of Europe. Thereafter, Africa's varied demography will be one of the principal determinants of whether the global population will peak in the second half of the 21st century or continue growing, a vexed and contested issue with added significance in the age of the climate crisis. And normally you would say, well, populations grow to the amount of resources they can create, the amount of food that there is there. I mean, if you look at, say, a colony of birds, they will reproduce to the amount of feed that they can find. If the feed for the birds is reduced, the population will become reduced. We haven't seen that happen, though, in Africa. We've seen this massive explosion in population, even though there isn't enough food for them. I mean, this is the reason why we have all this food aid that has to go over there. And they'll say, oh, we've got climate change has caused droughts. We've got another drought in Ethiopia or Somalia, or there's war that's caused this, and we have to send lots of food aid over. It doesn't matter what's caused it. The fact is, the food is limited. but they don't limit the number of children that they have. They keep producing children. So they say here that they don't know whether this is going to fall or whether it's going to keep increasing. And I would predict that it's going to keep increasing, because that's what we see so far. We see in these African countries that cannot produce enough to sustain themselves, they still produce 5 to 8 children to each family. Sheer weight of numbers must bring about a reimagining of African countries and their populations. This alone will impact geopolitics, global trade, technological development, the future of the world's dominant religions, patterns of migration, and almost every aspect of life. More widespread familiarity with the continent's diverse demographic characteristics and trajectories is a good entry point to this reimagining. So let's have a look at this here. They're saying this alone will impact geopolitics. Well, it's going to impact every country that these black Africans emigrate to, isn't it, really? Because they're going to increase in number there. And if they're looked at as part of this global majority, if they're encouraged to identify with the other non-whites, then they're going to make up a significant voting bloc, aren't they? They're going to affect the politics of every country that they are a part of. I mean, that's what this demographic replacement does. It affects the workings of democracy. It affects the politics. In fact, I was looking at a quote the other day, actually. I forget who it was by, some learned Greek elder philosopher, pointing out that democracy only works when you have the same ethnicity there. If you are to import a different ethnicity, then you are replacing the ones that were already there, and democracy isn't going to function in the way that it should function. So, of course, it's going to impact geopolitics. It's going to affect the politics of every country. Global trade, they say here. Of course, that's because more trade is going to be required. Africa is going to need to produce more in order to trade with the rest of the world for the things that they need, such as grain, fertilizer, farming foods. And how are they going to produce enough to make enough funds to actually pay for all that grain? If they can't do it at the moment, then how are they projected to do this in the future? Technological development, they say. Well, I'm not sure there will be that much technological development. I mean, if you've got half the world all have an average IQ of 70, there really isn't going to be that much technological development. And there's going to be a lot of strain put on the ones that are capable of it, because there's going to be so many numbers of people that just aren't capable of it. So the geniuses are really going to get lent on, aren't they? And I predict that there will be less technological development because of this. So the future of the world's dominant religions, what will happen there? Well, we do have a lot of black Africans that are members of the Church of England. We have a lot of black Africans who identify as Christian in Africa. We also have a lot of black Africans that identify as Muslims in Africa. So I'm not quite sure how this change in global demography is going to affect religions. Patterns of migration, of course, it is going to affect patterns of migration. It's going to increase the migration that we already have into Europe. As I've pointed out, we have this very, very young population over there in Africa. There isn't enough work for them to do over there. And on top of that, we have this low average IQ. So they all want to get out of Africa. Whenever they do any of these polls, I think it's about 60% of them say that they want to come to Europe. That's what they want to do, is come to Europe. So we're just going to see an increase in the migration that we are already seeing. Unless the European countries start protecting their borders and start rejecting these asylum claims, particularly in Britain, where we have people coming in and claiming asylum. Unless the European countries are going to start doing that, it's just going to increase, isn't it? And you're just going to end up with more and more white people in white countries being displaced by these black Africans. And it's all a question of us making a rod for our own backs, isn't it, really? We gave Africa all the medical technology. We gave them access to all the civilization that we had. And the result of that has been that their population has increased in growth And it's not a natural increase in growth. They haven't grown because they have developed the ability to do that themselves. They haven't developed the ability to grow more crops in order to sustain the demographic growth. It's all happened because they have access to resources in the West, because they have access to foreign aid, food aid, water aid, all this aid that we send over to Africa. So it's all artificial, this growth. And it's all been caused by us interfering with their development. Of course, once you have interfered with their development, then morally, you have to continue to help them, because you can say, well, they wouldn't be in this situation if we hadn't interfered. So we do still have to help them. But I don't think it helps to encourage them to migrate to Europe. All that's going to result in is a lowering of the average IQ in the European countries. And it's going to mean that there are less resources for Europeans. It means there are going to be less inventions, less innovation, and eventually there's going to be less ability to actually help the Africans in Africa, because you're not going to have so many things invented. You're not going to have so many resources that could actually go to helping them. But we do have to help them. So I think the best way to do that is to encourage them to stay within Africa. And then if they have too many numbers for their resources, then naturally they will have to start reining in those numbers, won't they? That they'll have to stop producing so many. I mean, it's a horrible thing to think about, but you know, you've got to allow nature to take its course. If a creature has increased so substantially that there aren't enough resources to keep those numbers alive, then that creature is going to have to start only breeding enough numbers to that the resources can actually take care of. I know it's cruel to think about, but we have to think about what's going to happen in the future. If something isn't done about this now, I can see that there will be this huge increase in Africa, and they're still going to have the same problems with the resources, and you're just going to have a lot of starvation that's going on over there, and them looking over here at Europe saying, well, why haven't we got that? And they're all going to want to be coming into Europe. We're really just creating problems for the future, basically, by doing this. I mean, what we could do, I suppose, is help them with farming and help them to create as much crops as they can and as many resources as they can in Africa. But at the same time, we should say we have to stay in Africa so that the ones that have the highest IQ stay in their African countries and help to develop their African countries, instead of being poached by places like the National Health Service in Britain. And you do get this phenomena of brain drain. You do get the most intelligent people in Africa coming to Europe to work. And if they're in Europe working, they're not in Africa helping to develop their own countries. So I think that would be the solution, would just to be to say to the Africans, well, you have to stay on that continent. You have to work to build up your own country. And we'll help you to do that. We'll help you with the technology. You know, we're not going to cut you off from our medical technology or anything like that. But you do have to stay on that continent. And I think that would solve this problem, wouldn't it? Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.